Do you know, one of the things I really enjoy about coming here is that there's always the testimony. There's always something to hear from the front, and that's brilliant because I hear your heart to share the good news of Jesus outside. You want people to know God's love for each of them individually. It's that church outside the walls, church scattered, church everywhere, that is the call on the church. So it's great to hear that, but I want to share with you some other questions that sometimes arise. Sometimes they're questions that we have, that we ask ourselves, sometimes within our group in church, and sometimes other people ask us. And actually, I've heard it twice, just this morning even, coming through. And that is, how successful are we being? How many people are we touching? What are our results? And actually, that's a tricky question, isn't it? What are we seeing in our ministry, in our mission? Sometimes the question behind it is, how much has our church grown numerically? Sometimes the question might be, is that one person, that prodigal, that I'm praying and witnessing to, are they responding? And it's all about results and success and achievement and outputs. And that's a really natural question to ask. It's a really natural question in the world, in our workplace. And it's not necessarily a wrong question or a bad question. We do want to know how many people came to our Easter event. We do want to know if the street pastor we've trained are seeing something in their ministry. We want all of those things. But is it always the most important question? Now, this is a question that's come up for us in our work, my work particularly, and I'll add a bit more about that later. So I want to share some thoughts with you that I hope might encourage you when those questions arise. So I'm not going to give you the answers, but I'm going to give you some things to think about. So I know in the testimony with the on the Halloween at the door was the, what am I seeing? That's that question. And Nathan said, how many people are we touching? So it came up just twice this morning. And there might be people here who week after week think, I haven't got a testimony to bring. So it's about when those things arise. So if we're going to talk about results, achievement, success in the Bible, where do we see that? Well, actually, I think the word that we want is fruitfulness. Fruitfulness is the place that we see an element of that in the Bible. We certainly hear about fruit from ministry and mission. We have the imagery of planting and harvesting in many places. And John 15 talks about the fruitful and the unfruitful branches and what might happen. So that's the area that I'm going to talk about. But actually, that's not what I'm going to talk about at all. I'm going to pick up the parable of the talents, which is one that you think, oh, that's fruitfulness. Let's talk about that one. Do you want me to read it? Or do you think you know it well enough?
Always good to read it.
I always think it's good to read it. And I'm going to read it from my phone. I'm really sorry. I've got my Bible here. But I'm going to read it from my phone. Because it's just easier. So again, it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted his property to them. To one he gave 5 talents of money, to another 2 talents, and to another 1 talent, each according to his ability. Then he went on his journey. The man who had received the 5 talents went at once and put his money to work and gained 5 more. So also the one with the 2 talents gained 2 more. But the one who had received the 1 talent went off, dug a hole in the ground and hid his master's money. After a long time, the master of those servants returned and settled accounts with them. The man who had received the 5 talents brought the other 5. Master, he said, you entrusted me with 5 talents. See, I have gained 5 more. His master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. The man with the 2 talents also came. Master, he said, you entrusted me with 2 talents. See, I have gained 2 more. His master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. Then the man who received the 1 talent came. "Master," he said, "I knew that you are a hard man, harvesting where you have not sown and gathering where you have not scattered seed. So I was afraid and went out and hid your talent in the ground. See, here is what belongs to you." His master replied, "You wicked, lazy servant, you knew that I harvest where I have not sown and gather where I have not scattered seed. Well then, you should have put my money on deposit with the bankers, so that when I returned, I would have received it back with interest. Take the talent from him and give it to the one who has the 10 talents. Fruitfulness. It's about the talents. In the passage, the master goes away. The servants, it doesn't say that they know for how long, does it? We don't know. But he do know that he comes back after a long time. So it was an extended period. The master, in that context as well, he's the master of the servants. We only hear about that. We don't hear about the rest. But in the Near East of that time, you've got that concept of oikos, an extended household. It's not just parents and two children. It's extended generations of families, related families, people who work with the family and servants of the family, all in a cluster of not just one large building, but could be a group of buildings together, in effect an estate or a kingdom. Think of it like that. The master, all the people who live there, in effect, are under the protection and provision of the master. That's how it operates. At the beginning, when he went on his journey, he gave some of the resources of that estate, that kingdom, to two servants. The 5 talents, do you know how much that was worth? So one of the commentaries I read was that the person who was given the 5 talents, it was the equivalent of 100 years' wages. That's not a little bit of just put it in your back of pocket and look after it for me while I'm away, is it? That's quite a lot of responsibility to do something with, to be given 100 years' wages. Because they didn't know how long it was going to be, it wasn't some, oh, well, I'll just do this with it either. It would have needed some strategic thought and some ongoing involvement to deliver something. So this was a long period of investment of things. Then when he came back, he settled accounts. And I have to say, I thought I'd better just check what settling accounts means, because I presumed what it meant. And it means to sit down together, to check and assess and pay or receive what was due. So it was what I thought, but I needed to check. So when he came and said, "Master, here, this is the 5 I got back," that's that settling of accounts. He was to pay across the 5 and the extra. We don't know if he got any bonus for what he, you know, a little bit of interest. We don't know. It doesn't say. So let me ask you a question. What was the difference between the master's response to the first and the second?
You're going to tell me I'm wrong now.
It's coming.
It's coming.
You should have had that one, I forgot. Oh, nothing. You don't want that. You don't want that next slide next. No difference. You sure? Were any of the words different? They were absolutely no different. Therefore, did the amount of fruit actually matter? It didn't. So fruitfulness was not the key message. It's not the driver of the passage. There was absolutely no difference. The first person who was visibly and numerically more fruitful had exactly the same response from the master. Maybe actually we shouldn't think about it like that. The first one had 5 and all he did was double it. But actually it still didn't matter. Because what did the master say? What were the words he used? Did he say, "Good and fruitful servant"? He said, "Faithful servant." So fruitfulness was not the thing he was looking at anyway. It was about faithfulness. But it's really easy for us to jump to that fruitfulness question, isn't it? It's really tempting. Did the master compare between the first and second servant? Did he encourage them to go and compare between each other? He didn't. Do we do that? Do we look at famous big names in ministry and go and follow the one that's most fruitful? Maybe that's not always we should do. We do want to learn from people, but it isn't what we should be looking at necessarily. It's about faithfulness. Now, faithfulness. We often think about putting our faith in when we, it's this. Faith is this way between us and God. We put our faith in God. We trust that God does things. This faithfulness is not about that. It's this way round. We are faithful. We have to be, so the servants have to be faithful in. They have to be trusted. They have to be responsible for something. They have to be relied upon. It's the other way round. So it's this faithfulness in the Greek. So it's remembering that we are the person rather than we are going to trust. So the servants didn't trust the master to deliver something with their talents. The master trusted the servant too. I'm going to... Sorry, I can't put that on the floor. Can't bring myself to put it on the floor. So, faithfulness and fruitfulness, do you think they're connected?
Yes.
I do. So 1 Corinthians 3 says, I planted the seed, Apollos watered it, but God has been making it grow. So neither the one who plants nor the one who waters it is anything, but only God who makes things grow. The one who plants and the one who waters have one purpose, and they will each be rewarded according to their own labour. That shows exactly that faithfulness and fruitfulness have got to be connected. God brings forth the fruit, however. We can't make that happen, and that passage is clear about that. We cannot be solely responsible for the fruit that comes. We're not. We can only be fully faithful in being available as co-labourers for God to use. If we are not faithfully available, the fruit can't come in all instances. So that's how they're connected. And yet we still long to see the fruit, don't we?
Yes.
We do. Yes. We long to see the fruit. They are connected. If we are faithful, then we want to see the fruit. And I think they are connected. But they're not connected in a way that we can control or even define. And if we don't realise that, we do get discouraged because our prodigal doesn't respond. Or these people that we're working with, we're not seeing the fruit that we want. Or our church is shrinking because it happens sometimes. So I'm going to share with you some things that when we were pondering this question in our work, and let me set you the context. So I work with a mission organisation, a long-standing, been in existence for 160-something years. It works with people of Asia and the Arab world, in Asia and the Arab world, but also now they're here. So we've got a team of 60-something people working to share the gospel with people of Asia and the Arab world in a holistic way. So it might be teaching English or it might be straight Bible study, right across the whole holistic spectrum of things. As you can imagine, that's not always the most fruitful of places to work. We don't see ramps of people of other cultural or faith backgrounds wandering into our church week by week, and yet we are called to share the good news with the nations. So there are questions that arise when people ask the question, so how fruitful are you? How many baptisms of people from a Hindu background have you had? And you think, really? So it's a hard question, but you do need to be accountable for your time. So I look after this team of 66 people, so I'm going to share some stories where they have been discouraged and encouraged that might give you some slightly different stories, and then you can think of your own. So I have one lady who's based in another city in the UK whose focus really is on a Pakistani Muslim community. She has been investing a long time, she's been investing a good amount of work into this community, their families and children. She does things with the women. And in the summer this year, she put on a holiday club in her church, in her local church. Big lot of the community came. She's been praying hard for fruit that she hasn't been yet seeing. And at the end of the week, There was a woman there with her children in tears at the end of the Bible study, at the end of the holiday club, and had talked about how welcome she'd felt, how much impact there had been. Could she come to church on the Sunday with her, which she did with her children, and she came the following Sunday, and this sort of fruit beginning to blossom. But this lady is Sikh, and she's been investing and looking over here for this Muslim community, and this has happened over here. Because sometimes we might have what we think is an apple tree, we are growing apples, and what we get is plums. And we weren't looking for plums, and we weren't wanting, and sometimes we miss them. And it can be discouraging because you've invested so much over here, and you get this. Because God is growing the fruit, not us. It's not always what we expect. This is a Bristol story. There's a good group of people in Bristol who have been trying hard to work with the Somali community for 7-8 years. Again, not really bearing a huge amount of fruit. Conversations here and there. Are we seeing people coming and wanting to do a Bible study or really exploring deeply or coming to faith? You do ask the question and say, well, what are we doing? Why are we not seeing anything? And then we set up, 6 months ago, a WhatsApp group, just of those of us who were involved in things in those communities, so that we could pray when, you know, if someone was going to meet this or whatever, so just to share news and updates. And it wasn't just the sort of smaller group of people, it was a wider group who were interested. There's a guy on there who started putting on there, I've got these three or four Somali guys who come in for Bible study. And it's like, what? No, hang on a minute. These are the people who are working with Somalis. What are you doing over here? Not in a bad way, but like, hang on, how did this happen? And when we explored and found out a little bit more, these guys had been at the Goose. They had met these nice Christians and decided they wanted to go away and find some other nice Christians somewhere else to look at the Bible with. But they didn't do it over here, where the first people who shared things. They did it somewhere else. And actually, we wouldn't possibly and never have known. Sometimes, the fruit happens somewhere else. And it's not where you are. And you may not even ever know about it. We only found out because we set up a WhatsApp group. If we hadn't, we'd never have known. Again, God grows the fruit where he wants, when he wants. And the last one is from a couple who have been working in their community for I think they must have been in the UK for 30 years, and they were working overseas before that. So they've been involved for a really long time, and they have been praying and working and seen just no fruit in their family, in their community at all. It just hasn't really come until this year. And they've had 2 baptisms from the community this year. And you kind of think, okay, that's that trickle. That's the new white, that trickle that becomes a stream that becomes a flood. And you think, let's pray that that trickle is next. But had they said, okay, we've been doing this 15 years, we're not getting any fruit, we'll just stop. Would it have happened? Maybe not. It wouldn't. You know, they're keeping going because... And I used that starter so that it was different to the others because... It just doesn't produce the time fruit in the time that we would like. It sometimes takes considerably longer. I also know a story of a prodigal where the parent had been praying and praying and praying and praying and praying and never saw the child come back. But it happened after the funeral. Their fruit did come. It just came after they could see it in this life. And that's okay. I also know people who've been praying, and actually, the response has been over here. Someone else has got the fruit. Don't remember that other people might be praying for people that you relate to, and you will get the fruit of their prayers here, because God brings the fruit where he wants in his time and in his ways, and we are all part of it. Without our faithfulness, it can't all happen. And there's one more. Where else can the fruit be? Sometimes what God is doing through all of this is in here. The fruit is inside us. It's not what we're looking for. If we're wanting fruit out here, God is desperately wanting to grow fruit in here. But it's not what we're looking for, and we don't always appreciate it, and we don't always thank God for it, because we're looking for it out there, because we have an external world that values that fruit. But God values this fruit, and that fruit, and that fruit, and that fruit, and that fruit, and those that you can't see. So, that faithfulness that we said was more important than fruitfulness in the questions that we ask ourselves. There are three things that we thought about, and one of them we found really important. Well, they're all important, but one of them gave us some more important things to think about. Was actually, so what are we being faithful to? What are we being faithful with? And actually, the first thing is being faithful to God. Clearly, we are faithful to God. We're faithful to what he's asked us to do. And what has God asked us to do? To love him, to love others, and to point other people to Jesus. That's it. Great commandment, great commission. It's no more complicated than that. But we do have to be faithful to it. And if we overemphasize or neglect one over the other, we get it wrong. If we focus on the, worshipping God and don't love others and don't share Jesus, we've got the balance wrong. If we only share Jesus and forget that we also should be worshipping, we've got the balance wrong. So that's the faithfulness, making sure that we are faithful to glorifying God in the fullness of what he calls us to. Faithful to his words. And I've put words with an S, because word with a capital W is Jesus. And yes, we're faithful to Jesus, but I want to be faithful to his word. We need to read it, understand it, explore it, learn it, live it, share it. It is living, and you need to let it live in your life. And you need to help it come alive for others. And if you're always looking at something which is a talk in someone else's words, or worship songs which are not really words, and you haven't got any Bible words in there, you might be missing some things. And if you're only reading it to feed your head and not making it live in your heart and your life, you'll be missing some things. So that's the second one. Be faithful to his words. And the third one, which actually is more important for us, is you need to be faithful to who God has made you to be and the opportunities and context he's put you in. So, she's sitting right at the back. She gave a really good example this morning, and I'll share another one with you, of what she did when the boys came to the door. Because she was faithful to who God made her to be and doing it her way. And everyone in the room might have done it a different way. But if you copy her way, you're not being faithful. We can learn and be inspired by other people, but if we're not faithful to what God made us to be, it won't be as effective and powerful. We won't glorify God to the same extent, because you're copying someone else's model, and we're not. This came up in one of my team. We try and encourage everyone to be part of an accountability. So to have a church leader, someone who's involved with mission, and a local person involved, to keep them accountable and be a good sounding board for what they do. And the church leader, it was a Bristol church leader, said, how to this other person on my team, how do you know you're doing a good job? Which is a really great question, but a hard one. And my team member reflected a little bit and said, so she's working in a very insular Muslim community. And she said, I always try in every conversation to find a way to help these people realize they are surrounded by Christians who can point them to a loving God who will meet their needs. And I do it by trying to tell a Bible story or bring a Bible verse into every conversation. I sat there listening to her thinking, I can think of so many times that you've done that. They were running through my head and going, oh my goodness, you do this. There was a friend's daughter had a baby recently, and they were doing a welcome for the baby, and they had Muslim women around and whatever. And this lady sat there and sort of made this very intentional question across the room and said, so why did you call him Ezra? And the mum said, oh, well, we like the name. Pause. I know why I like the name Ezra, was the, and then she just, you know, talked about Ezra, and she just uses those naturally all the time. And I thought, Dad, that's not my way. That's not what I do. And it made me think, oh, Seth, what do I do? And then we had a conversation afterwards saying, you do this. And then she said, but what do you do? And I said, I do this. And it's about what message has God put inside you?
Yeah.
What is the thing that you live out of? Because he put that there. That's what he gave you. That's your gift to the world. It's who you are and what you bring and your experiences to share with the world. And I think that's really important. And if you don't know what that is, ask yourself, what would you like everyone else to have a bit of a taste of? What is your message? What is it that you live and breathe and is so important and you'd love other people to get? That's probably a key to who you are and being faithful in how you share with other people. Let him show you your unique message. There is one more person in that story that we haven't heard about.
You're faithful.
Yeah, you have. The third servant. What? Sorry? I thought it was somebody saying to me. The third one. I'm reflecting a little bit on what he did and what held him back. Now, I think that he was held back by fear of failure. He was held back by not really being invested in that estate, that master's estate and kingdom, in having a misguided picture of his master, because he wasn't mean and harsh with the other two. Maybe fear of what other people might think. Maybe thinking he didn't have enough to offer or enough ability. But that clearly was not what the master thought of him, because he wouldn't have given him anything without that. And we can all find ourselves in that place as well. And that's where I think we come together as a body to help each other to recognize that we don't need to be that and we're not that. And had those three servants actually got their heads together, maybe there'd have been a third one that didn't have everything taken off him. And I think that's really important. Because what we want at the end is for God to say to all of us, well done, good and faithful servant. And for him to have the maximum glory and the maximum glory, onward glory, of those that we have touched through our planting of seeds that he can then bring fruit from. Amen.